Welcome to episode 6 of the Anarchaeologist podcast. Today, it is Archaeologist Under Fire. I talked to Brent Huffman, who's a filmmaker, who is releasing a film about a site in Afghanistan. It's quite a tough thing to listen to, but I was engaged the entire time I was talking to him, and I really loved to hear about what it's like to do archaeology in other places. So, buckle down, listen up, and just enjoy the stories that he has to tell. This is the Anarchaeologist Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Anarchaeologist podcast. This is episode 6. This is Battle Zone Archaeology. Today I'm speaking to Brent E. Huffman, who is a filmmaker who has a film coming out called Saving Mace Einak. I hope I said that correctly. Which is detailing an archaeological site in Afghanistan. The site has a lot of Buddhist structures and is quite a large site. But it is being threatened by a Chinese company coming in to start a copper mine. So, Brent, I just want to start off. How did you hear about this going on? What was the kind of, what drew you to this site in particular?
Yeah, oh, that's a good question with kind of a complicated answer. So I'm in the United States. I'm in Chicago, Chicago-based filmmaker, and I'm a professor at Northwestern University. I teach documentary filmmaking. So I read a story here in the New York Times about this Chinese company, and the story suggested that this Chinese government-owned company wanted to mine what was maybe $100 billion worth of copper in Taliban country in Mace Einak, this area. And this New York Times story suggested that the U.S. military was helping this company set up and was providing security. It was a very shocking story. And I had been interested in kind of China's presence around the world, and this story really struck me that, you know, China was willing to kind of go to Taliban country and, you know, create this mine and bring in its own employees, and that the U.S. government was involved. I just thought it was bizarre. Secondary, then I found out that on top of this copper preserve is this just enormous Buddhist city. It's about 500,000 square meters. It's a monastical complex, you know, temples and stupas and hundreds of statues. I think there's like maybe 600 statues, some of them enormous, you know, sort of 3 or 4 times life size, you know, just these enormous statues, a site connected to the Bamiyan Buddhist site that was destroyed by the Taliban, right on the Silk Road. And I learned that, you know, in order for this Chinese company to mine this copper, they would have to destroy everything. And they're proposing to do an open pit style mine, which would destroy all this Buddhist artifacts. There's actually a Bronze Age site underneath the Buddhist site, so it would basically destroy the site, erase all this history. There are 6 villages in the area that would have to be destroyed. And then as I'm sure you're aware, maybe your listeners are aware, open pit mining is terribly destructive. So it very likely just create this toxic pit where no one could ever live again. So all of this really interested me. The older I get, I'm also really interested in difficult stories to tell, you know, and I think this one kind of presented itself as an impossible story that nobody wanted to tell. You know, the U.S. military doesn't want this story told. The Chinese company doesn't want this told. You know, story told. So I think I was attracted to that. This story of this incredible site and this sort of complex and terrible situation that this site found itself in.
So, at what point did you go from, well, I want to do something, to actually flying over and getting things sorted? I mean, what was the process happening there? Did you get in contact with someone? Did someone get in contact with you? What happened?
Yeah, so I did this. It sounds crazy, but I did this all, you know, independently. I had been in Afghanistan before. I actually covered the presidential, you know, elections in 2004. Yeah, so I'd been in the country before, and Afghans are an incredible people, and it's an incredible country. They're a very warm people, you know. So I had already sort of fallen in love with the culture. I love the country. So I knew I could go to Afghanistan and at least work in Kabul, the capital city. But you know, Mae Sinek is about 25 miles southeast in Logar province, which is Taliban country. It's really close to the border with Pakistan. So it was a really scary prospect. Like, could I get out to the site? This is actually before I had children. And since I've got two kids now, it made it even worse, you know, going out to the site.
I mean, did anybody ever call you crazy for doing it? Like, did anybody say, yes. Yeah. Dude, you realize you're kind of playing with fire there?
Yes, yeah. People said, I'm crazy. So I actually went to the site in like an unmarked taxi. You know, I drove. It's like desert highways. You're the lone car on the road, you know, driving out in the middle of nowhere. It was very scary, through villages that were, you know, known Taliban supporters. I mean, it was totally insane. And people would tell me that. People would also tell me that, you know, there's not a film here, that like nobody's going to talk to me. You know, the Chinese will never talk to you. You'll never get access to the site. You know, kind of over and over again, people were, you know, very negative about this film. But I persevered. I visited Mae Sinek for the first time in 2011, and I was, you know, awestruck. You know, it's very Indiana Jones, you know. Kind of comparable to like a Machu Picchu, you know, which is another site that I've been at before.
That's in South America, isn't it?
Yeah, in Peru. Yeah, so it's a Mae Sinek is very mountainous, and it's enormous. You know, there are, like I said, these temples spread all over the place. There are these underground caverns that the archaeologists are exposing that are full of material. So it was just really exciting to be at the site. Like I mentioned, I'm not an archaeologist, but archaeologists tell me that the situation of Mae Sinek is really unique, in that they're finding just an incredible amount of, you know, material. They're finding statues and manuscripts and jewelry and coins and necklaces and just all kinds of thing, you know, complete artifacts. And I'm told that that's pretty rare, to kind of be just digging up all of this stuff, as opposed
to
just sort of fragments and things like that. So I think overall, you know, the site is, you know, just very, very exciting, very, you know, it is very cinematic for the kind of work that I do. And I think I fell in love with the site, and I fell in love with the Afghan archaeologists, you know, risking their lives to do this, you know, to do this work, like I said, in Taliban country.
So were there archaeologists already working on the site, or did you kind of get involved with were you involved with the project that was ongoing, or were you talking to a few and decided to put this together? I mean, what happened there for them to actually be on site and for archaeological excavation to occur?
Yeah, so when I arrived at the site, there was kind of the beginnings of small scale only local archaeology happening at the site. And, you know, after I was there, it kind of ballooned and got bigger, and then shrunk back down again recently. The situation is pretty bad there right now, actually. But when I arrived, it was just sort of the beginnings of this rescue project, and the archaeologists were sort of telling me and pleading with me that, you know, they didn't have enough time, and that what they were doing was kind of crazy and impossible. You know, they described the dig as, you know, a 30 to 40 year project, and they were given 3 years in total to kind of do everything. So they were really just scrambling, and they're also working without computers, without cameras, without any kind of equipment, without chemicals. You know, so you know, when I first arrived at the site, I felt like, you know, even though I'm a filmmaker, I'm a journalist, I felt I really have an obligation to tell the world that this is happening. You know, it wouldn't be okay if my film came out and the site was already destroyed. So I felt, like I said, that I had to kind of be this advocate and this activist for the site and help spread the word and do what I can to, if not completely save Mae Synak, to give the archaeologists more time to, you know, raise awareness. And that's still some, you know, that's still a big hope of mine that the film can do that.
So what sort of precautions, like, obviously you've talked about, you know, being cautious, going out by yourself in an unmarked car, but what sort of precautions did you need to take when you were on the site filming? Because obviously when you're in that kind of area, you know, things can happen quite rapidly. I mean, what were you kind of always concerned about? What was on your mind?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I mean, driving out to the site, Afghanistan is the most landmine country in the world, and so there are these old, still active landmines, like, buried in the ground all over the place. But also, you know, the Taliban will hide landmines in the roads at night. So someone working at the site sort of compared working at Mae Synak like Russian roulette, you know, like you kind of just never knew. And there was no precautions you could really take, like if you sort of stepped in the wrong place, you know, or took a wrong turn in your car. You never know. So you sort of took this 50-50 risk every time. I did work with a local Afghan fixer that I'd worked before, a translator, who I really trusted, and I think that was really important that I kind of leaned on his expertise. You know, we'd only go to the site during the day. I would never stay in the area overnight. You know, I would try to, you know, if I was driving in some way and there was some problem, we'd drive another way out or take a different way out if we felt like maybe we were noticed or followed or something. So like I said, it was always, like I said, this 50-50 if you were going to, you know, make it out okay, but which does sound very crazy. But as much as we could, we tried to take, you know, precautions. Now the archaeologists, you know, the Afghan archaeologists took far greater risks. Like they were, the main character in my film is named Kadir Timore, and he was, you know, constantly threatened. The Taliban would actually call him on his cell phone and say, you know, if you don't give us this amount of money, you know, we're gonna kill you. We're gonna kill your friends, the other archaeologists on the site. And he would still, you know, he'd still show up. He'd still come to work. You know, I mean, the archaeologists are incredibly brave. One thing that did happen during my time at the site is one of the workers. There's sort of local people in Logar province in the area that would work at the site sort of digging holes and, you know, moving dirt around and not archaeology, but, you know, just sort of removing dirt, rocks, and basic stuff like that. And he did hit a landmine with a pickaxe, and it blew up in his face, and he ended up, he's still alive, but he lost an eye, and it could have been worse. So, They face these, you know, threats from the Taliban, landmines all over the site. The Afghan archaeologists were also sort of pawns in the politics of Mae Synak. That's something I learned about archaeology was the political nature of it, that saving a site, it seems like something very simple and very obvious, but there were enormous political pressures facing the archaeologists on the site, and there were times when they wouldn't be paid for 6 months. That happened just this year, that the archaeologists weren't paid for 3 months and the site was just completely dormant. There was nothing happening. Are different groups of archaeologists that working at Mei Sinai, and they work at different parts of the site, and they don't get along and they fight with one another. I sort of learned those types of things, the complexities of a dig that maybe someone new to archaeology wouldn't assume, went on.
Were there any extremely large obstacles that needed to be overcome? I mean, obviously getting to this site was very dangerous, but I mean, on site when you were filming, were there any obstacles to overcome, and were there any obstacles that you could see with the archaeologists?
Yeah, so right. So in addition to just security threats and danger at the site, there were different groups of archaeologists, which I mentioned. One group was actually funded by the Ministry of Mines, the Afghan Ministry of Mines, which was a conflict of interest I felt. And they were actually, there were actually people employed under the Ministry of Mines with this team of archaeologists that tried to stop me from accessing the site. The U.S. Embassy, surprisingly, didn't want me to make this film, try to stand in the way of completing the film, which really surprised me. So those are some of the political ramifications. Or there were things that I would film at the site that people didn't want me to see, mainly some like these bigger issues of the Afghan archaeologists kind of being exploited and not paid. And in my film, I actually film a scene where this Kadir Timore, this Afghan archaeologist, has to fight with some of these European archaeologists demanding that that they're paid, that they get the resources they've asked for. The World Bank actually put out a press release that said that Mei Sinai was the largest archaeological dig in the world and the most expensive dig in the world, and that somewhere between $10 and $30 million had been put into this.
Did you see any of that money like being used?
No, the archaeologists were like begging for cameras. They were like, can we have some like digital cameras? Can we have a computer? I filmed this scene where they're fighting for like one laptop computer. And things like that really shocked me, as Afghanistan is kind of famous for corruption and for these kind of things happening, but that a site of this importance, it was getting so mired in this very kind of petty arguments and just things I felt shouldn't be happening. I had a Kickstarter where I raised money for the film, and actually in doing that raised money to buy the archaeologists some computers and some cameras, because I couldn't believe that they didn't have those things. And it just felt like it kind of felt like this setup for disaster, that the politics of the site were also that there would be a site manager that was usually a European, and that person would get fired every year, basically, so that a new person would have to come in and kind of start over. And there was always just this sort of, chaos at the site in an organizational way, and in making the film, I really got close to the Afghan archaeologists, and like I said, that's sort of the focus of my film. But I made quite a few enemies of people that didn't like what I was filming and didn't like the story that I was trying to tell, and that surprised me. People that I would think would become advocates for the site that actually sort of turned into, enemies of the film, and people that really tried to stand in my way and stop me from accessing the site.
Yeah. What kind of, when you're saying, obviously, from a filming perspective, you do have a story to tell. I mean, it's very much at this point, the story is more about the excavation and what it means in the political sense. I mean, what is the story that you're trying to tell? What is the general gist of it?
Yeah, so I think, saving Mei Sinai is kind of this love letter to Afghanistan that... especially in the United States, the stereotype of the country is that it's, you know, this the home of terrorists or victims of terrorism, and you know that it's this war zone, you know. But there's so much there, and yes, you know, it's a country that's constantly you know, been victims of war, you know, whether it's the Russians or the Americans or the Taliban. You know, Afghans have always kind of got landlocked and stuck in the middle of these wars. But, you know, underneath that, in a cultural sense, you know, Afghanistan has this just incredibly rich cultural heritage. I mean, hundreds of Buddhist, incredible Buddhist sites spread all over the country, you know, major Silk Road sites that are incredible, that are all being threatened by, you know, looting or these new mining ventures where somebody's kind of exploiting the people of Afghanistan, exploiting the culture of Afghanistan. So I see the film as this, you know, it is a documentary film that's showing, you know, Afghans really taking ownership of their culture and really, you know, risking their lives to try to preserve it for future generations. And, you know, and it's a small personal story of May Sinek, but I think it reflects the bigger, you know, issue of this is a whole country of, like I said, extremely important, you know, cultural relics and cultural sites. Literally all of them are threatened, like I said, by, you know, immediately threatened by war or looting or mining. And I hope my film is just sort of a way to show Americans that Afghanistan is so much more than the stereotype, and that, you know, in addition to the Afghans, there's this just enormous body of cultural heritage at risk. And, you know, people can get involved right now. People can make a difference and, you know, donate money to the archaeologists, you know, sign petitions, really help to save this heritage. It happened, you know, in 2001 when the Taliban blew up these towering Buddha statues from the 6th century. I think they were 150 feet or taller, you know, destroyed these wonders of the world, really. The whole world, you know, gasped and was shocked and horrified and outraged and sort of felt, how could this happen, and why didn't we do something to save this, you know, these wonders of the world, this incredible site? And now with you know, with May Sinek, people can get involved. They can put pressure on the Afghan government to fully preserve the site. They can donate money to the Afghan archaeologists to help their preservation efforts. They can sign petitions. They can really get involved and do something now. And that's what I hope the film can help kind of propel, save this site and hopefully save other sites, save other threatened archaeological sites in Afghanistan. You know, my biggest fear is that that won't happen, that May Sinek will be destroyed, that this Chinese company will blow up the site, completely destroy this Buddhist city, and then, you know, the world will say, oh God, why didn't we do something? Why didn't we step in? Why didn't we save it? That's my greatest fear, that people will wait until it's too late to act, when, you know, now is the time for action.
So I want to get back to the day-to-day part of the site. I mean, what did you kind of understand about archaeology before you started the project? I mean, what was your understanding, and what did you learn about archaeology?
Yeah, so my understanding of archaeology was pretty basic. I think I took one kind of overview course in college, and I'd been to an archaeological dig site, you know, once before in my life, so I was pretty much starting from scratch. I think I learned a tremendous amount. It is kind of a unique situation. You know, I learned that, like I said, the political complexities of a dig. I also learned about, you know, the different kinds of digs that, in a situation like this, in a battle zone, as you called it, you know, archaeologists are forced to work in a very different mode that I think frustrates them, and that's what was happening at May Sinek, that archaeologists were doing what they call rescue archaeology, which is you know, kind of like what a looter would do, you know, which is anything that's, you know, removable. So the thinking is that Mei Sinek, this Buddhist city, will be completely destroyed. All the temples, all the stupas, all the structures are going to get blown up. They're going to go. They can't save them. They're too big. If they tried to move them, they would break them. And the archaeologists, like I said, were lacking chemicals. They were lacking vehicles. You know, they were working with, in really the most kind of, you know, primitive situation. So the kind of work they were doing was, you know, digging into structures, trying to expose caverns, trying to expose other layers, and trying to discover any statues or, like I said, small artifacts like coins or artifacts used for copper smelting. The Mei Sinek was a major hub for copper smelting. The Buddhists were actually, doing an ancient kind of form of copper mining themselves. So they were actually there to mine the copper too. Everyone was attracted to Mei Sinek for the copper. So in performing rescue archaeology, they're basically just anything that they could kind of preserve and basically break off of the site. That's what they would do. And, you know, in the most primitive way possible. Those were some of the things that I learned, kind of the day-to-day frustrations and how to do or an attempt to do very complex work using the least amount of tools and the least amount of chemicals, you know, doing complex work in a war zone, you know. And I really came to it, just really admire the work of the archaeologists, you know. Like I said, the whole area was covered in landmines. I mean, imagine doing archaeology, you know, and digging somewhere when that, you know, that could be your last move, you know, that could blow your face off, you know. I mean, it is sort of crazy.
It seems like it's another world with what a lot of archaeologists are definitely used to. What is your definitely. Kind of general feeling about archaeology now? I mean, what does it mean to you? Like now that you've seen all that happen, I mean, do you respect archaeology a lot more, or definitely in Afghanistan?
I do. Yeah, I have an enormous respect for archaeology and archaeologists. I think, you know, if they didn't do this work, it would be as if this history was just unknown, or as if the history didn't exist. You know, there's this just tremendous rich history in Afghanistan, like I said, of these Buddhist pilgrimages and, Afghanistan being these major trading hubs where coins are being produced and, you know, people from all over the world were traveling through the country. But without archaeology, that history wouldn't exist. Like we just literally wouldn't know this ever happened. And we just consider to think of Afghanistan like this terrible war zone where you should never go. And, you know, where that's not at all the case. It has this just incredibly rich history and rich past. And, you know, the work of archaeologists, you know, is so important.
The reason I bring it up is because one of the things that I've always noticed, and it's always been a bugbear for me, is the way archaeology and archaeologists are represented in mass media, and how a lot of the time archaeologists are treated as, you know, the bumbling professor in the back of the library, or, you know, somebody kind of pottering around a little trench, finding some shards of pottery or something. You know, it's a very quaint kind of image. And what I really like about what you've described in the film is that you're portraying a very much a much more violent and realistic and actually probably very much more down to earth archaeology. I mean, do you know where that you understand what I mean with the differences in image of archaeology?
Yes, definitely. And I don't know if you want to hear this, but one of the frustrations for me about archaeologists sometimes
go on
is that and this is more true for academics, you know, archaeologists that are kind of rooted in academia, is that they're sometimes very dispassionate, or the field tries to make them dispassionate, and they're very careful about what they can say. So, you know, in my field, you know, in documentary, I try to look for, you know, charismatic, very passionate people. And by definition, some archaeologists, in part because other archaeologists will kind of pick them apart and critique them if they say the wrong thing, or if they seem too excited about something, or if they seem to care too much, you know, other archaeologists will give them a hard time and discredit them. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, I acknowledge it's tricky, but, you know, some of these things I think archaeologists do to themselves because of the nature of the field. Like, they come across like they don't care, or that they can't comment because they're, you know, they're being careful, and they're sort of afraid of what their peers might say about them. I think underneath that, though, you know, and the Afghan archaeologists sort of weren't this way. you know, underneath that is a lot of passion and a lot of devotion. But sometimes archaeologists don't let journalists see that, or don't let filmmakers see that.
To be absolutely honest, having a bomb possibly going off in your face really brings quite a lot of things in perspective.
Yeah,
I can't say that. That's the most horrible thing. obviously, a lot happens on the site, and there's a lot surrounding it. What is your hope for not only the film and not only the site, but like what comes out of the site? What are you hoping is the future in terms of, you know, what people learn from this?
So I hope, and some of this I've touched on, but that, you know, and I hope the film reaches a bigger international audience. It'll actually premiere at a major film festival at the end of November. I'm hoping it'll reach a big international wide audience. And I hope the film will, show just the incredibly rich and diverse heritage of Afghanistan that connects it to the rest of the world, and that above all costs is worth saving and must be saved and must be preserved. And this even notion that a private company can come in and just erase the history of the country is insane. Like it just can't happen. So I hope the film is this catalyst to save the site. I actually hope that the rescue archaeology stops, and that the site is just completely preserved, and, you know, that it could be made into a tourist destination. Actually, Bamiyan, the remains of Bamiyan for years has been a sort of tourist destination where people can come and stay the night and see the site, despite the violence, despite the risk of violence. And I hope the same thing for Meh Sinai, and I hope the same thing for other threatened sites in Afghanistan and, you know, anywhere else in the world. I hope that the film can kind of be this small personal story that reflects this bigger picture, that these sites need to be preserved, and there's people, in this case Afghan archaeologists, you know, risking their lives literally every day, going without pay, going without equipment, working in the worst possible situations to save their history, to save their culture. And I think the international community needs to get behind them and needs to help them as much as I can, as much as we can to do this work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so important for future generations that we preserve our history, you know, that we preserve the past. And yeah, I hope the film, those are kind of lofty things, but I hope the film can do, you know, some of that. At the very least, I hope the film can give the archaeologists more time to do more work and discover more things before it's all destroyed. But honestly, it would really break my heart to see, you know, the site destroyed, and to see the years of work that archaeologists have done now, you know, completely erased. It would be a tragedy on all levels.
You've done quite a number of documentaries over the last number of years, and actually apparently won some awards and got nominations. How has this film documentary been different to maybe some of your other projects?
Yeah, so that's a good question. This film has been different because, you know, on the other projects, I've been more, you know, observer and journalist and documentary filmmaker. And in this film, while the film, like, so I'm not in the documentary. The film is not my story. It's completely the Afghan archaeologist story. But in addition to the film, I've become much more of an advocate. You know, I've been on CNN talking about this. I've done stories for New York Times. I've written about this. Like, I've really been more of this activist advocate, you know, for the site and for Afghanistan in a much bigger way. And I think that's all just because, you know, the work of the archaeologists that I saw, you know, touched me and moved me. And I think I felt a real obligation that I couldn't just watch this happen, you know, that I couldn't go to sleep at night and be okay with myself if I didn't try to raise awareness about this and do more than just make a film. You know, that was really important that I was able to raise money for the Afghan archaeologists already, but I want the film to help do more, you know, to help kind of establish really secure, well-funded archaeological departments within Afghanistan that can not only save Maysteinak, but help save some of these other sites. But I think that's the big way this has been different, as I've kind of evolved into the film kind of being more of a movement than just this standalone movie that people watch.
So if people are interested in learning more about the project, what are the different ways in which they can get involved?
So I can give you the website.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, savingmaysteinak.com is kind of the hub for learning about how you can see the film, as well as updates about the situation, as well as ways you can get involved. So there's links to our official petition. There's ways that you could donate to the film, to the archaeologists. And hopefully, you know, Afghanistan is going through tremendous change right now, and some of that change has been positive. The country's got a new president, Ashraf Ghani, I think, is a former anthropologist, economist. I think there's an opportunity to, you know, re-present this material to this new president, resubmit a new petition to this new president, really kind of get the film in his hands, bring the cause to a new administration, which I am optimistic about. So all of that is sort of on the website right now. There's a very active Facebook page too that's linked from the website, where you can see images of the site. You can see you know, trailers and clips from the film. All of that is kind of up there right now.
Absolutely fantastic. And I implore everybody to definitely check that out. I'll provide links in the episode description below. If you are an archaeologist under fire, and that's probably in more ways than one in Mace and Einak, remember you can always get in contact with the show. Thank you very much, Brent, for sitting down, having a chat with us. And I hope and I wish all the best for the project. Do you think you'll be doing some more documentaries about archaeological sites? Will we see you again?
I hope so. Yeah, I'm very interested in Pakistan right now. There's a lot of sites under threat there and similar situations. So I would say probably.
No worries. Thank you for coming and chatting with us tonight.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for covering this.
No problem. That was the An Archaeologist podcast, talking with Brent E. Huffman. If you want to get check out his website, Saving Mace Einak, check the link below. That's it for this week, and check us out in a fortnight's time with the next show.